This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pressure to resign. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, March 2nd. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Some Democrats on Capitol Hill want Attorney General Jeff Sessions to step down. They say he lied about his contacts with Russian officials during confirmation hearings.
To deal with North Korea's nuclear threat, the Wall Street Journal is reporting the White House is considering things like military force or regime change.
Removing Iraq from a travel ban resolves some problems for the Trump administration, but creates others.
And the new approach from college professors, don't offend anybody.
The reality is, kids learn better. They make more progress when they feel comfortable on the campus. There's a lot of research that back that up. But what defines making somebody uncomfortable, being biased? That's the gray area that universities are struggling to figure out.
Wall Street Journal higher education reporter Doug Belkin on college professors trying to avoid getting fired by offending students. He's here in about 25 minutes. Senior Democrats are calling for the resignation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Turns out, during his confirmation hearing, the former senator from Alabama did not disclose meetings he had with the Russian ambassador. Mr. Sessions met with Sergei Kislyak twice, in July and in September, when he was a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Yet here's what he said during a January 10th confirmation hearing.
I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
But there seems to be semantics at play. Mr. Sessions yesterday said he never discussed campaign-related issues with anyone from Russia. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham appeared on CNN.
There may be nothing there, but if there's something there that the FBI believes is criminal in nature, then for sure you need a special prosecutor. If that day ever comes, I'll be the first one to say it needs to be somebody other than Jeff.
He was talking about investigations into Trump team ties to Russia being investigated by the FBI, which Mr. Sessions now oversees. Mr. Sessions had meetings with more than 25 foreign ambassadors in the course of the year. But his meetings with Mr. Kislyak came while he was a prominent part of Donald Trump's campaign team and amid growing reports of Russian meddling in the U.S. election. As we await a second executive order from President Trump regarding immigration, we're learning more about why Iraq might be excluded from a list of countries subject to a travel ban. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Wall Street Journal says while removing Iraq from the travel ban list will solve some of the White House's problems, it could create new ones. The revised order could ease concerns that it is wrong to shut out Iraqis who have served as translators for U.S. forces fighting ISIS in Iraq. But the administration is foregoing one of its central and political rationales for its original list, that citizens from those seven nations already had been singled out under the Obama administration for additional screening. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. President Trump cited terrorism concerns in signing the original executive order suspending travel to the U.S. for people from seven specific nations, including Iraq. A court put that order on hold. The new executive order will also be different in that it is not expected to apply to existing visa holders or to legal U.S. permanent residents. A couple of factors led to a big day for stocks. The Dow Industrials surged more than 300 points to their first ever close above 21,000. One contributing factor, the Federal Reserve's growing confidence in the U.S. economic outlook. Another, investor hopes that President Trump will deliver policies that boost growth. Yesterday, they were able to digest Mr. Trump's remarks to Congress on Tuesday, which they saw as even-keeled in setting realistic goals. Diane Swank is CEO of DS Economics in Chicago.
It was the conciliatory tone that he took about unity in Congress with Republicans and a Republican president and the move towards tax reform, infrastructure spending, things that we do desperately need.
The point gains set a new standard for the fastest ever 2,000-point milestone. The Wall Street Journal says Fed officials have indicated they're growing confident enough to raise short-term interest rates as early as a meeting later this month. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio. Glad you're with us. Does the Republican Party have a different feel at this point? Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today, says President Trump's first address to a joint session of Congress underscored how he has redefined the Republicans' political base and their policy message on issues from trade to immigration to deficits to international alliances. Susan, how so regarding the base?
Well, you know, the political base of the Republican Party has traditionally been Main Street and Wall Street, and now you've got to include also some of these white blue-collar workers, especially from manufacturing states, who were drawn to Donald Trump in November and who actually succeeded in electing him to the White House.
All right, and a policy message that's been tweaked as well.
You know, that's right. This is the speech that President Trump gave on Tuesday night, and which Republicans in Congress applauded, is very different from some of the stances that Republican presidents have taken in modern times. You know, you think about trade. He bragged about pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You may have seen that Speaker Ryan was not applauding very enthusiastically when he said that, because Republicans traditionally have been in favor of free trade and free trade deals. He also didn't pay very much attention to the deficit. That's been a cause for Republicans traditionally, but President Trump is calling for a big military buildup, for an infrastructure bill, for protecting Social Security and Medicare, the drivers of the deficit. So you really see him with a different focus on some of these big issues than Republicans have had in the past.
Why does it seem now that it's sort of deficits be damned?
That's right. Now, of course, he's got to go through Congress with his big legislative proposals, and there are some things on which he's going to get some pushback. You know, that budget plan that the White House outlined on Monday night, for instance, called for slashing the Environmental Protection Agency, slashing the State Department, where you saw even Mitch McConnell, the Senate majority leader and a Republican ally of Trump, just declaring yesterday that just wasn't going to fly.
We're speaking with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. Her piece is called After a Hostile Takeover, It's Trump's Party Now. So those are kind of the fractures that still need to be dealt with. And yet, I think you point out in the story, 84% of Republicans surveyed give him a favorable job approval rating, right?
You know, I called it a hostile takeover because remember when he was running for the presidency, running for the Republican nomination, the establishment of the party was almost united against him. So they're coming. The fact that they've come around to applaud his proposals in a joint session of Congress, that's a sign of the success he's had. And his very strong job approval rating among Republicans is notable. His approval rating is almost as high as Barack Obama's approval rating among Democrats was at this point in his term. And it's a little bit higher than Ronald Reagan's standing with Republicans at this point in his term. So he's doing really well with Republicans. But that said, he's doing really poorly with everybody else, and he has much lower support across party lines than previous presidents have had.
Interesting. So just play analyst for just a minute. Tuesday night, kind of why this new tone and more of a conventional State of the Union delivery to those remarks?
You know, it was definitely a kinder, gentler tone. I don't think he changed many of his policies, but he did seem to take a more conciliatory approach. I think there are two reasons. One is that he's had a pretty rough first 40 days and now has the lowest approval ratings of any president in modern times. So I think they're maybe trying to adjust things there. The other is we're going into a different phase of his presidency. He has now done some of the things he can do unilaterally by executive order, but to do big things like repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act or passing a big tax overhaul, which he hopes to do, that's going to require the cooperation of people in that chamber.
Is the clock ticking, Susan, in terms of, sort of voter satisfaction with getting big things done?
You know, one of the things we've found in interviewing Trump supporters And at USA Today, we've established this Trump voter panel. We're going back again and again to a group of voters who supported Trump to see how they think he's doing. They have really high expectations that he's going to deliver on the promises he's made. So it, for him, as for his predecessors, there's only so much patience for him to deliver on the things he said he was going to do during the campaign.
Thanks, Susan. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief at USA Today. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Florida Attorney General Jeff Sessions talked twice with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. during the presidential campaign season, conversations he did not disclose when asked during his January confirmation hearing.
I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it.
Last night, Sessions issued a statement saying he did not discuss issues of the campaign with any Russian officials. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi is calling on Sessions to resign, saying he lied under oath. White House lawyers have instructed the president's aides to preserve materials that could be connected to Russian interference in the election. The instructions, which were sent to White House staff yesterday, come after Senate Democrats last week asked the White House and law enforcement agencies to keep all materials involving contacts that Trump's administration campaign and transition team have had with Russian government officials or their associates. A federal judge in California says it's debatable whether the government has enough evidence to convict a woman of helping her husband plan the Orlando nightclub rampage. A judge yesterday ordered the release of 31-year-old Nora Salmon while she awaits trial. The prosecutors have 2 days to appeal that decision. Omar Mateen killed 49 people at the nightclub last June. Texas's top law enforcement agency has opened a preliminary investigation into Baylor University and how it handled reports of sexual and physical assaults over several years. The Texas Rangers confirmed they are working with the prosecutor in Waco to determine if further action is warranted. And Baylor officials say an internal investigation found at least 17 women who reported being sexually assaulted by 19 football players in recent years, although one lawsuit puts the number at more than 50. Owning your own home is still the American dream, but the home itself appears to have gotten smaller. Many homeowners say if they decided to move, they'd want to downsize, not find a bigger place. According to a survey by Trulia, 37% would rather have a smaller house, 23% want a bigger one.
It's a lot more to clean.
That's true.
Vacuum, mop,
dust bunnies.
Dust, a little bit. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Good Thursday to you. Time for a health and wellness update, and it's brought to you by Walgreens. With expert pharmacy care from Walgreens, diabetes won't slow you down. Stop by to get the medications you rely on and supplies from all the major brands. Walgreens, at the corner of Happy and Healthy. Burnout on the job is on the rise to the point where companies have farmed out their workers' well-being to employee assistance programs. You may have seen the signs or experienced them yourself, right? Workers who used to take the lead on projects, now growing taciturn during meetings. Top performers start coming in late. More from Wall Street Journal management reporter Rachel Feinzig. Rachel, what about burnout?
Burnout itself is really a kind of extreme stress reaction. Gallup has done some polling on burnout both in the U.S. and in Germany. But in terms of the more recent data, we looked at calls coming into employee assistance program phone lines. So that's like workers calling in if they feel like they need kind of some extra emotional help or support. And the data showed that a few years ago, 50% of those calls were related to stress and anxiety. And now that share is up to 70%, and total call volumes have also increased recently.
Wow. What's behind all this? Is it perhaps just a new awareness that there's help available, or are we feeling new and different types of stresses?
Part of it, like more of an awareness around this issue. I think there's a couple other things going on as well. First is kind of this always-on culture. I mean, technology, it sounds kind of trite, but it does just keep kind of getting more and more overwhelming, and people feel like they have to be on 24/7. Years ago, that was the case with certain kinds of jobs, like litigators or doctors. My dad is a doctor, and he had like one of the first cell phones in his car. He needed to kind of be in touch all the time if he was on call. But today, everyone's on call 24/7.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal management reporter Rachel Feinzig. Her piece is called Feeling Burned Out at Work? Join the Club. Is this unique to the U.S.?
No. Burnout is also a problem in Europe. Like I mentioned, there's been studies done in Germany where this is kind of a big thing, and companies are trying to do things to tamp down on the problem. So it's not unique to the U.S. I mean, I do think in the U.S. there is kind of this burgeoning awareness. You know, the financial crisis changed things, and I think that recently people are starting to realize that some of this stuff isn't going away, that this sense of job insecurity and doing more with less is here to stay. Again, apologies for being trite, but that it is kind of the new normal. And I heard from people that that's kind of sparking more of this awareness around burnout as well.
What about the idea that it might hurt business overall if too many people or even, you know, top management folks are feeling stressed?
Yeah, there's you know, data showing that this impacts productivity, turnover, which can be really expensive for companies, as well as workplace health, you know, which can be costly.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal management reporter Rachel Feinsig. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Are you looking for a great wine at a great price? The solution is Cameron Hughes Wines. He's got a fascinating story. Cameron Hughes has relationships with these high-end wineries and producers all around the world, where he sources his wine and sells direct to you for much less than you'd pay under other labels. His wines deliver on price, value, and quality. Best price, best wine, quality guaranteed. The best part is Cam guarantees all his wines. If you're unhappy with any bottle you buy from him, he'll make it right. Now, Cameron Hughes doesn't typically offer discounts because his prices are so much less than retail, but he's offering our listeners a fantastic deal on your first order of three or more bottles. Free shipping on that order and a sommelier-grade corkscrew. Only if you go to chwine.com and use my code DEAL. The only way to get free shipping and your free sommelier corkscrew, go to chwine.com. chwine.com. Shop for your wine. Enter my code DEAL at checkout. Don't wait. It's a limited time offer. This wine is fantastic. The deal is phenomenal. And I want you to go online and order it today. Again, chwine.com with the code DEAL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Thursday, March 2, Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Sessions under fire for his Russia contacts. Military force could be an option to slow North Korea's nuke program. Historic winter in the Sierra Nevadas, 17 feet of snowpack right now. Mount Etna belching lava in Sicily. Researchers say brisk walking can help with early-stage Alzheimer's. The New York Times says the Nintendo Switch is the first must-try gadget of the year. And White Sox slugger Jose Abreu says on the flight that brought him to the U.S. illegally, he needed to get rid of his fake passport, so he slowly ate it with help from a Heineken. College faculty across the country are adapting to an environment in which a word or turn of phrase, if perceived to be biased or insensitive, has the power to derail a career. Is this any way to teach? Perhaps more importantly, if you're a student, is this any way to learn? Professors are starting to be very, very cautious now. Here's Wall Street Journal higher education reporter Doug Belkin. Doug, what's up here?
Well, the idea is that there's a lot of students on campus who are quick to call out professors for saying something that is offensive to them. And so professors are watching what they say. And there's a lot of things that are structurally changing on universities that can essentially get professors in hot water if they're accused of saying something that's untoward. Mm. One of the big developments is these bias response teams that are made up of usually administrators. So if a student says a professor said something in class that made me uncomfortable or was racist or sexist or insensitive, they can go to one of these bias response teams and they'll ask questions and try to get to the bottom of it and look into whether or not the professor was indeed, you know, out of line. And if they are, then that can have potentially significant consequences for their career. So there's this there's a chill in the classroom that some professors speak to where they're concerned and anxious about what they say for fear of getting in trouble.
Goodness. Let me try to bring out both sides here. I mean, on one hand, are we talking about some thin-skinned, overly sensitive snowflakes here, or are there real concerns?
I think that the tone of what is acceptable and what was acceptable has shifted a lot in the past 20 years. You know, universities, it wasn't that long ago when universities were filled with white men and not much more. Universities, you know, it's not the case. They're very multicultural places now, and folks want to protect. Universities want to make their campuses places where students feel safe and comfortable. And the reality is kids learn better. They make more progress when they feel comfortable on the campus. There's a lot of research that back that up. But what defines making somebody uncomfortable, being biased, that's the gray area that universities are struggling to figure out.
Explain this this one guy you opened the story with, this Frank Thomasulo. What did he go through, this film studies guy?
So he's a good example, I think, of what's happening on campus. He's 70 years old now. He's been around for a long time. He's very accomplished university professor. He's led several departments at schools around the country, and he retired and then became an adjunct faculty member. And adjuncts, as an aside, I should say, have much fewer rights than tenured professors. They're much more vulnerable to being not having their contract renewed or being asked to leave. They just don't have any job protections. So in this capacity, he gave a lecture, and he asked, in the middle of a lecture, a young black woman was speaking. He asked her to be quiet. She refused, according to him. He asked her to leave. She refused. He called security. They escorted her out. And then he said something to the effect of, I hope that the rest of you folks in this class don't bring this attitude from the hood into our classroom. And this was just a code word and a dog whistle, and they got rid of him very quickly.
Wow.
I should say they didn't. He resigned, but they were, I think, happy to see him go. They put a lot of pressure on him. So, you know, from his point of view, this was not a word that was racist from the perspective of the students sitting in class, especially the black students. It was clearly racist. And that that ended up being a big no-no for him. There's another woman in who teaches at a community college in California, in Simi Valley, which is a very conservative area. She teaches Western civilization. She has a lecture coming up she's been giving for a long time about fascism and nationalism, and she's very nervous because she says there's a lot of things around Trump that come to mind and parallels that can be brought, and she doesn't want to go there because she's afraid her students will accuse her of being biased, and that could cost her job.
How about that? Wall Street Journal higher education reporter Doug Belkin with what's going on our college campuses these days. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly, too, on Twitter @GordonDeal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's some good news as we head towards pool season. Scientists have now identified an easy way to measure pool urine by looking for traces of a common artificial sweetener. The bad news? There's a lot more of the stuff than you'd care to know in your average public pool. Researchers monitored two public pools for 3 weeks for the sweetener called acesulfame potassium, or ACE for short. One pool contained 110,000 gallons of water, while the other held 220,000 gallons. Based on the ACE measurements, researchers estimate that over the three-week period, swimmers released 7.92 gallons of pee into the smaller pool and nearly 20 gallons into the larger one.
Whoa.
Yikes. In addition, the team analyzed 250 samples from 31 other pools and hot tubs and discovered the ACE levels were up to 570 times greater than the amount of urine found in tap water.
Oh.
Which, of course, made me think about, wait a minute, there's
wow.
urine in my tap
there
water?
There actually is urine in tap water.
apparently, there's a trace amount,
okay,
but much more in the pool. So more than just a disgusting thought, the study says that the excess urine in pools could lead to ailments such as eye and respiratory irritation.
Well, to be fair now.
Yes?
You don't have to clear out of a public pool when they find pee.
You don't.
When they find something else in a public pool,
yes,
that's when you have to clear it.
Right, right.
So pee, you know, urine, generally speaking, is sterile, right?
Right.
They cause eye irritants, yes.
Right.
But
again,
you don't have to evacuate.
Well, maybe it's just because you can't see it, you know, as opposed to the other stuff, which you can see. It's just right out there.
Yeah, not that you want to know this stuff, but generally it's not harmful.
Okay, good to know.
Everybody in.
And, you know, it's hard to have lived in America for the past 15 years, Gordon, and not be somewhat familiar with the music of the band Nickelback and the band's lead singer, Chad Kroeger. Less familiar to most, perhaps, is the band's drummer, Daniel Adair. That's why a 45-year-old Florida man allegedly tried to take advantage of Adair's relative anonymity anonymity and order $25,000 worth of drum equipment in Adair's name. According to police, Lee Howard Koenig allegedly used a fake email address to contact a company from Vienna, Austria, to order the equipment and have it sent to his house. One of the company's reps rightly found the order suspicious and contacted Adair, who confirmed that he did not place it. The email address used was not his, and he does not live in Florida. Investigators say they were able to determine that the IP address used to send the email indeed came from Mr. Koenig.
Mm. If I may, Mike.
Yes?
I'm going to make the assumption that this Lee Howard Koenig
mm-hmm.
is not a rich man.
It doesn't appear so, no.
And therefore,
yes.
If you would allow me to say, he couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing.
Oh, boy.
To borrow a line from Nickelback. Huh?
All right.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think we're going to get out now.
14 minutes now in front of the hour.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into a Thursday. Proof that the stock market is the leading indicator for luxury car sales. The Wall Street Journal says a soaring U.S. stock market is propelling sales of super luxury cars. Buyers are feeling more confident about shelling out six figures for a set of wheels as market investors have been on a tear in recent months on bets that the Trump administration will enact business-friendly policies. Sales of Bentleys, Ferraris, Maseratis, Porsches, and Rolls-Royces jumped an estimated 18% since the November election through January. That's according to numbers from Auto Data Corporation. That far outpaces the gains these upscale brands had been notching through the prior 10 months. Rolls-Royce sales, for example, jumped 42% between November and January to nearly 300 vehicles. Lamborghini sales up 15%. Economists call it the wealth effect. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Fortin Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he never met with any Russian officials to discuss issues of the campaign. Sessions released a statement last night in response to reports he had two conversations with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. during the presidential campaign. Sessions did not disclose those communications at his confirmation hearing in January.
I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
Top Democrats Nancy Pelosi and Elijah Cummings are among those calling for Sessions to resign, saying he lied under oath. Republicans were more cautious in their remarks, but Senator Lindsey Graham told a CNN town hall last night that if there's substance to allegations regarding Trump and Russia, they need to be independently investigated.
If there is something there, and it goes up the chain of investigation, it is clear to me that Jeff Sessions, who is my dear friend, cannot make this decision about Trump.
Republicans have vowed for years to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but now that they have a GOP president asking for a repeal bill, a massive divide within the party is threatening to derail the efforts. The drama is spilling out following the release of a plan that House Republican leadership was drafting that includes at least a half dozen components that are opposed by various segments of the Republican Party. Meanwhile, Democrats like Congressman Elijah Cummings have contended all along that changes can't be made.
The costs being lower and the quality being better. That's what he said he's going to do. I don't see how you can do it. It doesn't work.
Majority Whip Steve Scalise dismissed the release draft as an old one the GOP leaders never intended to advance. Well, if you're planning a trip to D.C. to see the iconic pink cherry blossoms, you better speed things up because the fabulous display of blossoms is expected to be historically early this year. The cherry trees are predicted to reach peak bloom when at least 70% of the blossoms are open between March 14th and 17th. That would be the earliest peak in the 90-year history of the festival.
That's just rearranging vacations and weekend getaways everywhere.
Have you ever been there to see
No.
It is absolutely fabulous.
I've only seen the pictures.
Oh, yeah. To be there, it's really amazing.
I can imagine. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. How about this story from Austin, Indiana, where a guy who's a creature of habit may have saved his own life by not being a creature of habit for one morning. Raymond Bowling told CBS News that due to the recent storms, he barely slept Tuesday night. So when his alarm buzzed at 5:30 yesterday, Mr. Bowling did something a little out of character. He hit the snooze button. Minutes later, he heard a huge crash. He searched his dark room for a sign of anything that fell. Then he walked into his bathroom and saw something strange, a huge tree limb that had pierced his ceiling, as if it were thrown like a spear through his roof. Says if he hadn't hit the snooze button, he'd have been brushing his teeth in the very spot where that branch came through. It might have impaled him. The tree limb fell from a 40-foot-tall pin oak tree, which towers over his home. Luckily, Mr. Bowling said his insurance company had it removed within 2 hours. And though the bathroom will still need further repairs, Mr. Bowling says he's just glad he and his 15-year-old son are safe. Ought to play the lottery soon. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Transition seamlessly from presentation to meeting and from work to home with the Dell Latitude 13 7000 series, the laptop that takes care of business. The powerful performance and incredible battery life from this reliable business-class PC featuring Intel Core processors lets small business employees do their best work wherever work takes them. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. That's Dell.com/radio.